morning by welcoming our visitors. We have several in the audience. We're glad you're here. We want to invite you to come back at every opportunity you have, and we welcome you doing that. You might be able to find a visitor's card just in front of you. We would appreciate it. If you'd fill that out, you can just hand it to me as you go out the door. Really appreciate having a record of you being here, but glad you're here. This morning's format is a little bit different, and let me go ahead and announce that. Usually about twice a year, every 6 months or so, I do a question and answer sermon. These are really popular with a lot of folks here. And what that means, Wes and Everton at the back have index cards, and they're going to pass those out to anyone who would like one. I assume some of you have already written questions. But I take questions from the audience, and the entire lesson is devoted just trying to answer those questions. I ask you to write them out. It just makes it more orderly if we do that. So at this time, are there any questions anybody's got written out already that you want to turn in? Pass them to the center, and they'll pick them up and bring them up here to me, and I'll get started with those. So if you've got questions, pass them to the center. And when I finish this round of questions, I'll call one more time for questions. And, so if you've got one you want to write out now, go ahead and write it out. And I'll call for those here in about 15 minutes or so. Are there any other questions that need to be turned in right now before I get started, though? All right, if not, I'm just going to take them as I receive them. So some of them may be somewhat of repetitions. That's okay, too. If I read your question and it's a repetition or pretty much I've made the point from a previous answer, I'll refer back to that. But regardless, we'll go through as many as we can. So let me just start with the first one I've got. Some religions teach 10%, the tithing idea, 10% as a requirement. Is it a reasonable rule of thumb? Well, that's a great way to ask that question. Is it a reasonable rule of thumb? If not, how do we figure out what God would consider acceptable? All right, let's say a couple of things from the very beginning. Tithing, or 10%, was part of the requirement in the Old Testament, and I stress part of it. If we were to add together everything that the Jews were required to give to God, and I mean if we add sacrifices, etc., etc., the Jews would have been required to give, some estimate as low as 30%, some estimate as high as nearly 60%, but you can see the range there. So the giving done by a faithful Jew would have been some 30 to 50, 60% of his income, his wealth. And they were expected by God to trust that they would be able to give that much. If they were faithful, God would prosper them, etc. The 10% in particular was a tithe, a tenth of everything that they had that went toward the support of the worship, that is, toward the support of the priests, the temple, etc. So they gave a tithe. Now, is that a reasonable rule? Well, yes, it's a reasonable rule. But in the New Testament, as a priest, you are required to look at yourself, look at your income, look at what you have, how God has prospered you, and you are to reasonably decide what you're going to give of that. Now, it will involve the collection, and we'll talk more about that. It will involve the collection, but it will also involve a lot of other giving. If you're going to help, you know, maybe various family members, not your immediate family. If you're going to help neighbors, even friends, etc., that you know of, it's going to require you give. And so a lot of Christians take the 10% and say, as a basic foundational amount, I'll give 10%. And then beyond that, maybe they do a lot of other giving. So it's a great way to ask the question, is it a reasonable rule of thumb? If you mean as a base amount to contribute into the collection plate, yeah, it's a reasonable rule of thumb. Some give more than that, obviously. That is up to the personal decision of each individual. And, of course, the question goes on to say, if not, how would we figure out what God would consider acceptable? And hopefully I've touched on that. Maybe I will as I go on. Second question, regarding 1 Corinthians 16:2, and I'd like for you to turn to 1 Corinthians 16, if you will. This is the basic passage of commandment for why we do what we do at this place. In other words, we give, we take up a collection only on Sunday. Why do we do that? When I was growing up, we took up a collection at every single time we met, and sometimes more than once when we met. And a lot of you come from that same kind of background, but why do we only do it on Sunday, and why do we do it as we do? Well, 1 Corinthians 16. So the question says this. Regarding 1 Corinthians 16, verse 2, define prosperity. I wish I could. No, define prosperity. I'll try to talk about that. Does it include gifts, pensions, social security, inheritances, unemployment? My answer is yes. In other words, in any fashion that God prospers us, and I think the idea of prosper is something to your benefit, something to your good, that would be the idea. And a connotation of it, meaning the way we normally use it, is something above your basic needs. So if God prospers me, and of course we would mean in every sense, every fashion that I'm benefited to provide for myself, my family, food, shelter, and clothing. And then above that, all other means that I have for provision or just use by God would be considered prosperity. And there's a second question here. Was there more than one tithe commanded in the Old Testament? What were there? Well, only one tithe that I know of, one basic tithe. But sometimes that idea extends, as I said earlier, to a lot of that giving. And so gifts and offerings and tithes, and God would be lumping a whole lot of those kinds of things together. Next question. I hope I can read this. Oh, okay. Why did the early church not continue in tithing? And, of course, when they were under the law of Moses. Well, the law changes at the crucifixion. The old law is nailed to the cross. Colossians chapter 2, verse 14. They are living under the law of Christ, and a lot of things change, such as the day of worship. Saturday ceases to be the day of worship. And Sunday, or as we call it, the Lord's Day, becomes the day of worship. And so Acts 20 and verse 7, we would see the disciples meeting together for the Lord's Supper as we did on the first day of the week. Again, if you're in 1 Corinthians 16, notice this. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, even so do you. So you can see it's a widespread practice among a number of churches. Upon the first day of the week, Paul said, again on Sunday, let each one of you lay by in store. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure. But the idea is why the early church did not continue in tithing is because the law has changed. What we see in the New Testament, notice here in verse 2 in particular, on the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store as God has prospered him. Or if we went to the passage Bill read for us a moment ago, we purpose in our heart what we are to give. We look at what God has done, how God has prospered us. We take a portion of that, a percentage of that. If you want to be regular about it, and I think you should be, you determine what you're going to give out of your means. If more prosperity comes to you, long lost uncle leaves you $1 million, well, you've got more, and you may want to give more. I would certainly hope you would want to. The idea is you have to purpose now. God is not going to set a percentage. And nowhere in the New Testament is there a percentage that's set. We are no longer under the law of Moses, and that's the idea. Should Christians use a benchmark of giving at 10%? You see these questions, a lot of people think about the 10%. And of course, this question goes on to say, you know, 11%, more than 10%. Some Christians, and I will direct your attention to Matthew 5, and you may want to turn over there quickly with me, because this is something that I've had come up over the years, and people have asked me that. Look at Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, and notice how Jesus is talking about the righteousness of the Pharisees here, and I'll find the exact verse. Look down at verse 19, when he says, whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. I believe the kingdom of heaven refers to the church and to this age. Whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say unto you, here would be the law of Christ, that though your righteousness shall exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. Let me just quickly make this point. In Matthew 23, we can see Jesus referring to the Pharisees and how they might get down on their knees and literally count the leaves of a spice plant, mint and anise and cumin. And they may take one of, one leaf out of each 10 and give that. And Jesus doesn't condemn that. These you should do. You should be that meticulous about your giving. And yet, some Christians tie that together with Matthew 5 and say, our righteousness has to exceed, in a Pharisaical way, our righteousness has to exceed that of the Pharisees. So if they counted one leaf out of 10, maybe we should count 3 out of 20, a little bit better than 10%. Or 1.5 out of 10, or whatever it might be. So the idea would be exceeding. I don't believe that any percentage has been given to us by God telling us what percentage to give. By the same token, a Christian should look at what he has, and I think you should always be willing to fall to the side of, let me give everything I can, versus how much do I have to get by with what God commands. And so if you understand the difference in that, I think sometimes our giving will way exceed, just that 1 out of 10 idea. All right. Questions? More questions that need to be turned in? Please pass those to the center of the aisle and hold them up so they can collect them. And while they're gathering those, thank you, sir. And I'll continue to just go through these questions. Again, if you have them, please pass them to the center of the aisle, and we'll take as many as we can here. Does God know when we're making excuses for not being giving as we should? Or does He understand we believe we may not, quote-unquote, have it to give? Now, that's a good question. Let me start off with a simple answer, with the easy part of it, and say, does God know? God does know. God knows everything. He knows your heart. He knows if you're giving, if you're not giving. He knows the reasons why you're giving or not giving. He understands every bit of that. I know that a Christian should refer to all the examples in the Bible. And one of the basic ideas of giving is trust. If I can find it, you may remember a passage that I emphasized last quarter. Turn with me to Proverbs 3. If not, I'll know there's another one I know I can turn to and the principle would be made. But look with me at Proverbs 3 and down in verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. Drop down to verse 9. Honor the Lord with your substance and with the first fruits of all your increase. So will your barns be filled with plenty. Your wine presses will burst out with new wine. What is God saying in that passage? Number one, He's saying, don't try to develop a philosophy, and that would apply to your giving. Let me come up with some creative philosophy, some idea of excusing myself from what God commands me to do. I believe that's taught in that passage and many others. The second part of it would say this. God would say, trust me. I'm commanding you to give. You need to give. You need to give of whatever you have. The classic story of the widow. She passed by, she threw in 2 mites. It's not a lot of money, but for her it was because it was all she had. And the idea is you give, and if you'll notice in this passage, you give your first fruits. Off the top, give to God. If you're sitting down and making a budget, and I would encourage everybody in here to do that, I think we all need a budget. If you're doing a budget, at the top of your list, not the bottom, should be what you're going to give to God. And then beyond that will be all of the things in your life that you need to spend money on, and lastly, what you want to spend money on. Does God know that we may not have it? He does certainly know that. If your income is zero, if your prosperity is zero for a time, it may be for a time, for various reasons, God understands that. Just as much as if you're sick and you're not able to be here this morning, He understands that. But never try to get creative in your reasoning to say, God knows I don't have very much, and so what are we saying? So He has to come last, or not at all. I don't believe God is teaching us that in His Word. I think God is saying just the opposite. Trust me, I can prosper you when I choose, and in every way I choose, and that would be the example. Does God basically tell us that He wants us to prepare our contribution to Him quote unquote, off the top. What'd you do? Read my mind? Off the top. Before we make out our budget for all, I don't believe this question. But yeah, you just heard the answer. Yes, God does basically tell us. I think that's what he is saying in passages like Proverbs 3 or Malachi 3 or other passages like that. Or going back to the 1 Corinthians chapter 16, purpose it. And I think that's the idea. If you look at the word purpose in those passages or in other, you know, in several words that are used, what is consistent in all of them is God is saying ahead of time, plan to give to me and plan well to give to me. Yes, off the top, as you're saying here, and then I will take care of you. And that's certainly what God is promising. Some churches teach to give 10% and also the collection. And I know that's right. In other words, you have, and the question was asked earlier, if you remember, is there more than one kind of tithe? And that goes back, it harkens back to the Old Testament idea of the tithe proper, the 10% or the contribution to the temple and its services, and also the other giving that is commanded by God. And so some churches teach, yeah, you've got a 10% collection, and then there's also other giving. And sometimes there's even programs. When I was in seminary, we were taught to always, always have not just a board like this one up here reporting our attendance and our giving, but also whatever project we had. And what I was taught in this particular class was, people, churches need projects. They will give if there is an organized project. So there was always that basic collection, and then there was the project or other types of giving, and again, public, not just what you do individually. And so the question is, should we be doing both? Well, let me answer that by saying this. Christians should be giving people. Your disposition, James led us in a perfect song to segue into this lesson. I gave it all. I gave everything I had. I gave it all so you give to me. The question is asked, what have you given for me? If I sit down and ask myself a question, how much have I given to God? Can I give more? Now, I do that. And I suppose every week I have one of those sessions, if not more. How much are you giving to God? How much are you giving besides what you put in the collection plate? Can you give more? Do you need to give more? Are there needs out there that are personally connected to you and you can be doing something about it? Now, obviously, we could find a way to spend all our time in giving and 100% of every penny we have. We could do that. And that's not what God is saying. Not to the neglect and detriment of other things. But again, the idea of the Christian, the heart of the Christian should be bent toward giving, not away from it. I think if we began to look in the Bible, we would see that the idea of being selfish and stingy and, you know, non-giving people would not be following in the pattern of God, not following His example. So always, if you will, err to the side of being a giving individual. What do we do when we feel we're not prospered by God? And the question goes on. So let's look at this. This is an interesting question. What do we do when we feel we have not been prospered by God? For example, we lose our job, or a certain misfortune befalls us, or lastly, when we miss a target in our goals. Let me take each of these because I think they are different. There may be a situation in which I lose my job. I may have zero income. I've been there. I know exactly what that feels like. 1982, unemployment. Some of you older people can remember how bad things were in the early 80s. In Alabama, unemployment hit 17%, and I was out of a job. So I was beating the streets looking for a job. I had a younger brother that was living with me, and I was trying to take care of me and my younger brother looking for work when there was 17% unemployment. I know exactly what that feels like. There wasn't any money coming in, so there was obviously no money being laid in a collection plate. That may happen for a time. Does God understand that? Of course God understands that. Is God involved in that? Yes, God is involved in that. And my prayers during that time were simple. I need a job. God, help me find a job. I know there's 17% unemployment. I know nobody is hiring. I've got to have a job. We have to have a place to live and we have to eat. God knew that. I got a job. But there may be a time when you do not have cash flow And so you can't have outflow of cash, of course. Secondly, a certain misfortune may befall you. And that's true. You could get in a situation that requires everything you're making and more. And there's no income, no prosperity, quote, end quote. And you may make a decision to lessen the amount that's coming in or whatever. That's a personal decision. There's no way I can stand up here and govern that, how much of whatever is coming in you should lay in the plate. But again, I fall back to, I should be trying to give first to God and trust Him. Lastly, when I miss a target in my goals. Now, that one can be interpreted in a number of different ways, but let me just try to simplify it. If I set the goal high, if I'm a salesman, let's say, and my income is based on my sales, if I'm saying to God, you know, God, if I double my sales this month, I'll give to you. If that's what we're saying, then I think we're wrong. But if the idea is I've missed my target in the sense of I need to make X amount and I fall short of that, then I might be adjusting how much I give. Because again, I do have a priority to take care of myself, take care of my family. Again, I'm not saying not to give, but I am saying you might have to adjust it. But the situations are different, and I hope I've explained that. If not, feel free to ask me about that, and I'll go further with it. This question says, should young children, students, be expected to give? Let me answer that simply. Are you making any money? You know, if you are a student and you've got a job, and I worked while I went to college, and I had a job, and I made money. It wasn't a lot, but I did make some money. All I can tell you is I looked at it like if I had income coming in, if I had been prospered by God, I should give. Again, that's a personal decision, but I think it starts with the question, are you making money? I know being a student, and I told Jules this a long time ago, being a student going to school is hard work if you work at it. You know, if you're really trying to do a good job at going to school, I know that's a hard job, but it doesn't mean money is coming in for that. So, are you making money? Are you prospering is the idea. Second question on this one is, if I am poor, some look down on only giving a few dollars. But giving has pressure. And let me just answer this question very simply. Yes, people look down on giving a small amount because people are people. Jesus does not. The whole story of the widow's mite, there are several lessons there, but one of the lessons is there were a lot of rich people passing by and they were casting in of discretionary wealth that didn't mean anything. It was no great loss to them. They didn't feel it or anything else. But here was a woman that gave everything she had. Trusted God, laid the two mites in the plate. That's the one God blessed. Don't worry about what people think. If you can give a small amount and somebody else can give a great big amount, and that great big amount is considered by other people to be far more important than your small amount, that doesn't mean anything. Let God be the one who judges that. You do what you should do as far as God is concerned. And then trust God. As a Christian, what does the Bible teach when we're raising a child and teaching them to love one another, yet how do you have them protect themselves from others during doing physical harm to them? Well, it's not a question about giving. But I'll give a simple answer to that. Just have them, but no, I'm sorry. I don't want to revert there. No, hard situations, definitely hard situations. And so obviously you're going to have to talk to your child about protecting themselves. And a child has to stand up for himself, has to protect himself. But again, not a question about the giving this morning. Go with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Now, this was the passage that Bill read for us, and considering 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, is the sowing and reaping literal or figurative or both? Well, I believe it's both, personally. And I believe what Paul is saying here, if we go to this passage, is give as God has prospered you, give as you purpose. That would be the idea, but let's read it. That ain't chapter 9. All right, chapter 9. This I say, he which sows sparingly, he is definitely talking about the giving. Chapters 8 and 9 certainly show we are talking about contributions of money here to help out in the situation. He says, he which sows sparingly, that is, you don't give very much, will also reap sparingly. God doesn't prosper that very much. Now, we're not talking about dollar amount. We're talking about the idea of giving from the heart, the idea of sacrificial giving. We could see that in chapter 8 and the beginning of chapter 9. Versus just giving a little bit to kind of do what you think you're supposed to do. Token amount is the idea. So if you just give a token amount, you sow sparingly, you're going to reap sparingly. You give a sacrificial amount, you really are a giving person. God is going to bless you. Notice verse 7. Everyone, according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly. And the idea here is, don't lay it in a plate as though, boy, I wish I didn't have to do this. I'm not sure. I really want to give. If you're giving like that, forget it. Don't give. God would say, give because it's what you really cheerfully, and this idea of the word cheerful here has to do with courage and happiness as a result of it. Give because you trust God. Give because God will bless you and you know that. Give because God will take care of you and you know that. Does that mean if I give and I give a whole lot that, you know, that I could have spent on a new boat, that God will make sure I get the boat anyway? No. You may sacrifice, and God may ask you to sacrifice, but the benefit there will be certain. And I'll just say it like that. The benefit, the blessing, will be certain. Let me run through these because I am definitely running out of time. Aside from the changing of the law, does the Bible give any insight into the way that God changed the system of giving? Well, the day changes from the law. And I'll just say it like this and I'll answer it simply. In the New Testament, the law of God changes from the physical. That is, really focusing on this is what you got to do and this is what you got to do, like you might tell a child. Step by step, this is what you have to do. Where in the New Testament, we are expected to be mature. We are expected to understand things like they could not. We are expected to take personal responsibility. And so the insight in the New Testament would be you look at yourself and your situation and you make a mature, godly decision about what you ought to give. In Genesis, the Bible talks about the tree of knowledge and good and evil. And this is some questions about the tree. And so I'm going to drop down to the second question. Explain Matthew 23:23. Does it encourage tithing by Christ? I quoted that earlier. The answer is no, it does not encourage tithing. What it is saying is this. An example of giving might be, if you took that as literal as you can, to get down and count the very leaves of every plant in your house. That's not a bad thing to be that meticulous about your giving. How might we parallel that to a Christian? Be aware of everything you're prospering, of every way you're prospering and everything you're making, everything you're getting. And judge your giving accordingly. Don't look at it like all of these things off the top that I have and enjoy and want and all of that. And now I've got this amount and what percentage of that amount, besides all that, am I going to give to God? That's certainly not the example of the giving from the Old Testament and what Jesus was supporting that there in that passage. So the idea would be give and give carefully. Does first fruits come before debt repayment? That's a good question. First fruits means number one. And the Jews had debts, and the Jews planted crops, and there was the first fruits, the first harvest, and then there was the later harvest. The simple answer to that is the Jews were taught by God, give first, then repay debts. So should debt repayment come second? And I'm not telling you not to pay your bills. But what I'm saying is this. I will say it simply like this, and I think I can get off the hook with saying this. But debt repayment comes before any discretionary wealth. In other words, if you've got a debt to pay, I mean, you're going to have to live somewhere, and you're going to have to eat, and you're going to have the basic necessities of life. But basic necessities of life are not all the things that we would consider necessary. The cable, and the phone, and all those kinds of things. Debt repayment needs, you have an obligation. So God comes first, but debt repayment is very high on the list. Let's put it like that. Does the teaching which requires us to give our first fruits mean that everything we receive as our first fruits should be given to the church? No, I don't think so. I don't think that's what he's saying there. He says give of the first fruits. But what it means is off the top, the very first money you make in a whatever period of time, usually for us that's weekly or biweekly or monthly, give of that to God off the top. That's what it means. Should the first fruits of every new job or every new month, and I think I just said that, whatever, in what period of time I'm prospering, first of that, give to God. Let's say you're very rich. You have a lot of money. And when God says to give as He's prospered you, does God have a limit on how much you give? Yeah. And that limit is set by you. And that's exactly what he's saying. But I would point you to 1 Timothy chapter 6 and look down at verses 17 and 18. Charge those, command those that are rich that they be ready to give. And that would be the idea of always having a giving heart, ready to give. It doesn't mean you run out there, you know, I've got this wealth, so God is saying to me it's wrong to be wealthy. If it is, it was wrong for Abraham and he stayed wealthy, and David and he stayed wealthy, and on and on. That's not the point. But it is saying be a giving person. Certainly, as a person who's wealthy, I would never be in a situation where I knew someone in my circle of influence is destitute and I just don't care. I let that person starve, literally, and I go on enjoying my wealth. A Christian with a Christian heart, I don't see can do that. I don't believe Jesus would ever do that. And so, you know, that's how I would govern it personally. But again, it is a personal judgment. Is there any difference between collection for the saints and collection of the saints? Easy answer, no. There is a difference. One has to do with the saints giving the money. The other has to do with the use of the money. And the money that is collected into the plate that Christians give into the plate is to be used for Christians. There are different areas and different things that the Bible talks about. 1 Corinthians 16, as this question asks, is referring to a collection for poor Christians or needy Christians, and so they are taking that collection for them. And that's why it's called the collection for the saints. 1 Corinthians 16, again, it appears as though Paul said, put money aside personally, not collecting each Sunday. 1 Corinthians 16 can be a difficult passage. Let's look at it quickly. Go over there with me, if you will. The collection for the saints, as we were just referring to, is to be done, verse 2, on the first day of the week. Now notice when it says, and the King James will say it like this, let every one of you lay by him in store. You may have a different translation there, but all of it will have to do with a treasury or a collection of funds into a place. That is, into a storeroom, into a store box, treasury box, in our case, into a bank vault. And here's the point, without spending too much time, because I don't have it, but if we were to go over to Mark chapter 12 and we were to see that widow, and we were to see those folks passing by and casting into the treasury there is the noun form of this verse, of this verb in verse 2. Now what does that mean? They regularly cast into that literal box sitting in the temple. It was the treasure, it was the storehouse for the money that was collected. And what it is saying to us in 1 Corinthians 16 is to do that same thing regularly, each first day of the week, cast into a treasury. Now, how do we do that? We put it into a basket, they take it back here and account for it, they ledger it, and they take it to the bank and deposit it. And there it sits in a treasury, ready to be spent for the things God has commanded. So yeah, 1 Corinthians 16 is talking about a regular contribution into a treasure store or a treasury of some kind. Is helping others a form of Christian giving? Yes, it is a form of Christian giving and all part of the giving we do. It is not the same as the collection. This is our public giving. This is our obligation weekly to give. The other is a judgment that I'm making from time to time. Try to wrap up here very quickly. Giving should not only be a collection, helping the poor, praying for the sick. This should be all giving, giving of self. And I'll just amen that. We are to give ourselves to God, and it includes all of it. Is giving grudgingly the same? And again, grudgingly, King James, begrudging, maybe more the modern term. Is giving grudgingly the same as being worried about finances at the same time that you're giving? No. Giving begrudgingly is the idea of giving, and I don't really want to. I'm giving it, but I wish I didn't have to, would be the idea. And so God would not have us to give that way. Great questions. Thank you, guys. You keep me busy when we have these question and answer sermons, and there are probably other questions out there. Feel free to ask them of me, and I'll do the best I can on a private basis with you. Or anything that I've said this morning, you can feel free to ask me about whatever I've said. Hope some of that helps. It's good for us to think about it. It is also equally, and maybe more importantly, good for us to think about giving our lives to the Lord. One of the questions asked about that. And we should. And maybe you're here this morning and you're not a child of God. You have not given your life to the Lord. But you're willing to this morning. You believe that Jesus is the Son of God. You'll confess that He is. You're ready to change your life and live your life for Jesus. And you'll be baptized to have your sins washed away. Give your life to the Lord. Maybe it is that you're here this morning and you've been baptized, you've become a Christian, become a child of God, but you've not been giving your life to the Lord, and you know that. And you think about it, and you think this morning, you know, it is good for me to think about giving into the basket, but I need to be thinking about my life as a whole and whether or not I'm giving my life to Jesus. If you need to do that and you'd like for us to pray together with you, please come while we stand and sing.